The Moving Iron Podcast is brought to you by these great sponsors. Are you looking to value your equipment more accurately, target the right buyers and close more deals, reach your ideal customer? Then look no further. Fusible isn't just about ag data, it's about action. Our best-in-class solution empowers you to value your equipment accurately, make informed decisions, and find the perfect prospects. Ignite your dealership's growth at fusible.com/movingiron-podcast. Out in the field, every decision counts. You wouldn't plant without testing your soil, so why would you prospect blind? Introducing EDA, your one-stop shop for ag equipment intel. EDA goes beyond specs and prices. You get deep dive data on every piece of equipment, like UCC filings that help track ownership changes and uncover potential sales leads, D&B firmographics, which help you understand the financial health and buying power of potential customers, market trends that help you stay ahead of the curve, and insights on equipment demands and pricings. With EDA, you're not just looking at data, you're seeing opportunity. Find the right buyer, sell smarter, and build lasting relationships. Visit edadata.com for your free demo and unlock the power of knowledge. For over 80 years, Iron Solutions has been your go-to data source for ag dealers, lenders, and manufacturers. Get powerful appraisal and value forecasting tools that fuel profitable decisions anytime, anywhere. Get your free demo at ironsolutions.com. Iron Solutions, confidence in every click. Today, there are many ways to finance ag equipment, but nobody delivers simple, fast, or flexible financing like AgDirect. Learn more about your options to buy, lease, and refinance equipment at agdirect.com. Valley Transportation has been hauling ag and construction equipment across the country for the past 33 years. Call Parker at 800-657-4910 for all your trucking needs. At Valley Transportation, our goal is to help you reach yours.
When you partner with Axon, you immediately gain access to a full range of products and solutions designed to meet the complex needs of today's grower. We carry all major brands and sizes of tires and wheels. We specialize in large diameter wheels for large equipment. We have one of the largest OEM replacement wheel inventories in North America. Known for extreme flotation setups, duals, and triples, we have wheels for all makes and models of tractors, sprayers, combines, and grain carts. If we don't have the wheel in stock, we'll custom build, sandblast, and paint in-house. There isn't a more vast inventory in North America dedicated to helping dealers move more iron. With facilities on the West Coast and in the heart of the Midwest, leverage our 230,000 square feet of indoor inventory to solve any problem a grower may have. Move more iron with Axon.
Moving iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving iron time and time again. You'll find us here, Moving Iron.
Hello and welcome to Moving Iron Podcast. I've got a pretty unique situation here with the Baltimore port and the way it's closing. So I wanted to call in an expert on the export business and have him come in and kind of explain what's going on. Blake Bina is with Professional Export Services, and I've worked with Blake in the past on a few things, and thought I'd reach out to him and get his expertise on the situation here. So Blake, I appreciate you being a part of the podcast.
Hey, good morning, Casey. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
I appreciate you being on, man. Blake, real quick, just give a brief background to yourself and kind of who you are and how you got to where you're at today.
Sure. So Blake Bina, president, owner of Professional Export Services. We're an international freight forwarding company, having been open for business in the Minneapolis area since 1988. I've been involved with international logistics and freight forwarding in the Minneapolis market for the better part of 27 years. Our primary focus is right in the name of the company, exports. So we focus primarily on helping U.S. producers of commodities, machinery, et cetera, get their product overseas. And we have experience helping people move Ro-Ro cargo predominantly over to Europe. We do some South American moves as well as containerized business, regardless of origination point within the United States. Even though we're office domiciled in Minneapolis, our breadth and scope covers coast to coast and border to border, if you will.
Right on. Okay. Like I said, I've used Blake and his service before. So anybody looking to do some export work, Blake's a great guy to get a hold of. We'll get that, have that information in the show notes, how to get a hold of Blake as things move forward here. So Blake, let's start like this first. So, you know, we had whatever it was, a week ago, whatever, we had a ship hit the bridge there, the Francis Scott Key bridge in Baltimore, collapsed the bridge down. Since then, I saw where the other day that a ship did make its way through one of the well, a barge anyway, made its way through to an auxiliary route that they had kind of lined up there. Baltimore is like the whatever it is, eighth or ninth busiest port, but the key part of the Baltimore port when it comes to equipment is the roll on roll off situation, which is the Ro-Ro, like you talked about earlier. That is one of the premier places in the United States that does that. That was what makes this port so important to incoming equipment, whether it's a cat stuff, ATCO stuff, deer stuff, whatever it is, all that stuff that's coming in from wherever it's getting manufactured at. That is a big issue there. So I guess talk a little bit about the importance of the Baltimore port when it comes to roll on, roll off, and then how that may affect the bigger picture here of what roll on, roll off equipment might look like.
Well, it's important to realize too, because we all are, you know, seeing the news, the national news. That's probably the best pictures that we're all getting about this. It's very important to understand the vessels and or barges that you're referring to. From what I've been gathering from the industry newsletters I get from the steamship lines, is that those are specific to the Army Corps of Engineers and are really only transiting to support the salvage recovery work that the Corps of Engineers is doing. Okay. So it's very important to see what you're seeing and understand what's happening in that there aren't any commercial vessels, to my knowledge, that really will have an opportunity to get in or out of the port until the main channel where the ship and the bridge, you know, had the accident, until that gets cleared. And I had a conversation the other day. I've worked with Hoag Lines is one of the largest, the premier Ro-Ro carrier in and out of Baltimore. They would also be able to service out of southern United States down in, you know, Brunswick, Savannah, Jacksonville as well. But Baltimore would really be their home base on the East Coast. And according to the guy that I spoke with, the clearance is, even when there's nothing in that channel, from a draft standpoint, the clearance is, you know, less than 5 feet. So any debris that has settled, any containers that are down there, really all of that needs to get out. And, you know, the time frame now, it's, you know, he originally said that, yeah, we've got indications it might be 4 to 6 weeks. And, you know, within a day, they were like, no, it's going to be, you know, 4 to 6 months potentially. Right. So it's important for people to understand what you're seeing, and the work that's really happening that needs to happen below the surface is going to take a long, long time. Right. Hoag and really any of the other Ro-Ro carriers out there, which there are just a handful of them. So there's Hoag Lines, there's MOL Bulk, there's NYK, and there's Wilenius Wilhelmsen would be the four main Ro-Ro providers that would provide, you know, services into the United States, be it from Asia, South America, and Europe. They all have the ability to call at secondary ports. And when I say secondary, it's not like they're lesser ports, but they have multiple ports of call along the eastern seaboard. And it's primarily limited then to, and ACL is another one that would have a railroad service. So you're now looking at, you know, New York, New Jersey, which anybody that's exporting railroad machinery doesn't really want to go through New York to New Jersey. It's a bit more, there are a bit more headaches with U.S. Customs and the declaring of the railroad units when you go through the port of New York. That's why Baltimore has always been favored. But you can't just divert a railroad ship into any other port simply for the fact that the infrastructure, the ability, again, these railroad vessels, as I like to equate them, is it's a parking garage on the water. So you're going to have a ramp that goes down. You're going to have things just drive on, drive off. And not every port in the United States is set up to handle such a ship. So it's not as easy as going, well, divert my railroad into Norfolk. There wouldn't be the ability to load it. So Hoag, and specifically, and again, I'm not here to advertise or promo Hoag, but that is just who I've been able to get the most information from. They do have a secondary port in Wilmington, Delaware, which is nearby. However, that is set up primarily for their auto business and not necessarily set up for the larger machinery type of shipping. So, you know, the problems that you are going to run into as a potential exporter of the railroad goods is that, you know, you might have to incur additional costs to, you know, move the units into, say, Savannah or Jacksonville in order to, you know, get space on some of these vessels. Gotcha. Inbound out of Europe or even out of Asia, again, those ships are already being diverted. Anything, and in speaking with Hoag as well, they had a ship that was to have, you know, made it into Baltimore later on in the day when the accident occurred, and they were already, you know, diverting that vessel, most likely heading south to, you know, the Savannah, Brunswick area to handle the cargo coming inbound. You know, again, unfortunately, if you can do an aerial view of the Port of Baltimore and see, you know, there are massive, like, parking lots, lack of a better word, as well, where, you know, John Deere, Case, you know, Caterpillar, all the big, you know, the big three have, you know, parking lot space. And if you had a unit that had been delivered in, and it's not uncommon to, you know, have the ability to deliver a piece of railroad cargo 3 weeks to a month before the ship actually is going to leave the United States, because these carriers, again, they don't operate on a weekly fixed schedule like your containerized ships do. So, you know, they afford you the ability to stage your equipment there. Well, unfortunately, if you had something staged there that was going to be exported via Hoag or NYK or, you know, another railroad carrier, there's going to be costs incurred, unfortunately, by you, the exporter, to retrieve the cargo and get it out of there. And similarly, we're seeing that happen with people that are shipping containers out of the port to Baltimore. You know, the port at this point has no way to generate revenue. They're shut down. So really, the only way for the port to generate any type of income is to, unfortunately, you know, charge people for having your goods sit there. And, you know, the longer it sits there, and that's really unfortunate. And it's, yeah, you know, a risk of, you know, doing any type of international business are some of these, you know, unknown risks that you just don't ever think about. But you, as the exporter of record, you as the one who is, you know, profiting from the transaction, these are your costs. So that's kind of one of the bigger things that, you know, people that are stuck there may not be aware of, is that, well, I get that I now have to move my cargo out of there. And if you opt to say, well, I'm just going to wait, well, keep in mind, as you sit and wait, the steamship line will be charging you, because the steamship line will be getting a bill from the port.
Okay. So when it comes down to it, like if you're looking at moving that, so I've done that before where you've had, I dropped the machine off a month and a half, 30 days before the ship was supposed to get there, and, sat there and you wait for the ship to come and it gets loaded and it's all kind of, the whole cost of that sitting there is kind of figured into the amount of the freight and everything else that goes along with that. So now you're kind of one of those things kind of stuck in the middle, right? If you go pick it up and bring it someplace else, you got the trucking costs that are associated with that as well. Or is it just sit there and wait? I mean, kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't in a lot of scenarios.
Well, unfortunately, you have a buyer. Hey, where's my machine? Where's my machine? And, you as the seller, it's not as if you the exporter, couldn't provide proof as to what happened, unfortunately, out in Baltimore. Mm-hmm. And, maybe the buyer is in a position to work with you on, splitting some of the repositioning costs to get the equipment out of Baltimore to another port. But at the end of the day, if you opt to leave the units sit there while this unfolds, don't be surprised if you get a pretty hefty parking tab, so to speak.
Right. Yep. Okay. So talk a little bit about, so you and I were kind of talking about this the other day and I'm a bit slow, Blake. So after I thought about what you said, it kind of started sinking in a little bit. So when you're looking at machines that are sitting there that are getting ready to go and they're sitting in Baltimore, and let's say what would be another port they could go to that would have the ability to like say Savannah, would that be a good port to pick that would be able to handle that?
Well, that it would really come down to where's the cargo destined to?
Okay. Like
where is it going? Brunswick, Savannah, Brunswick, that would be a good port for European bound cargo, as would New York and ACL. You could go to New York and go to Europe. You would maybe go to, Brunswick, Savannah, Jacksonville, if you're heading south into, South America. Houston also has the capability to handle ro-ro cargo. That would be primarily, again, set up for business going into South America and potentially some other Asia destinations. So it's really, where to whom and where are the goods going? Where did you sell it to would kind of dictate what the best alternative port to move it to would be.
Right. So in the situation with the stuff that's already sitting at the port now, if there's a ship coming across that now is going to get diverted to one of the ports you just talked about and drop off whatever it is they're dropping off, Kloss is dropping off a bunch of whatevers, right? So now you've got to get, if that's where that ship's going to go back to Europe or it's going to go back to Asia or wherever it's going to, the idea that you're going to have to now freight that machine from Baltimore to Savannah or Houston or wherever, now you've got those costs associated with that. But the other side of that now is you could have missed the whole ship now to where your 30-day lag on the coming across the ocean and 30-day lag going back. So it may be maybe 60, 90, even 120 days before what you have to ship out even gets on a boat. Is that probably a fair assessment?
Well, correct. It could be. And I say could be because as soon as that port shut down, again, big green, big red, big yellow, they are the main contract holders. They fill roughly 85 to 90% of any and all of the ro-ro carriers' ships on a consistent monthly basis. So those companies immediately went into contingency plans, moving their cargo, moving their orders that they've got guaranteed business on to these other ports. The ro-ro carriers will take their business, immediately. And unfortunately, then what that does to, the secondary market, which, a lot of, the moving iron clients and my clients will be playing in, that space is gone. So now you're in a position of all of the cargo that was, you know, just flowing through Baltimore. And yeah, Case IHA, we've got some stuff that we can move out of Savannah. We've got some stuff that maybe goes out of New York. Now everything is being forced into these other pipelines. Right. And the space, again, it's very finite because, again, you're only dealing with four carriers, and it might be of the four carriers combined, maybe 10 to 12 vessels a month. So your clients have sales on the books that they haven't started, you know, moving anything out to the port. And again, for the past 6 months, year almost, based on, you know, a tightening of the railroad capacity, a lot of companies have had to look at moving, you know, a John Deere 9600 combine from the middle of the country out to either the Savannah area and or Houston, at which point you're able to take the unit, maybe remove the wheels and put it onto a flat rack and then ship it from there. Unfortunately, by doing that, you're incurring additional costs because the easiest way to move any type of these larger units is just roll on, roll off, because you're not handling it anymore. You don't have to hire a stevedoring company. You don't have to worry about, you know, oversized trucking permits once you hit the port. But really, it might be the only option for some of your clients is to move it via a flat rack. And, you know, that would be, you know, your trucking costs should remain pretty much the same, whether you're originating, you know, a row unit out of Indiana, Illinois, Nebraska, wherever, and you're heading to Savannah or you're heading south to Houston, your inland costs will be the same. Your costs are going to start to increase because containerized flat racks are going to be more expensive than just shipping the unit as is. Plus, then you have the additional costs of the stevedoring companies to securely load and lash at the port. But it at least affords you the opportunity to continue with the selling of your secondary equipment.
Gotcha. All right, so let's talk a little bit about what's coming across from the various places, you know, that would be coming into Baltimore to drop off equipment. So let's talk about, you know, the AGCO groups. Let's talk about, you know, John Deere stuff. Let's talk about Crown Cloth, those kind of things, where you have some finished goods that are coming across the ocean. As you look at those machines now and you start looking at where they would have gone, like say they got shuffled around to Savannah or Houston or wherever that might be, what kind of lag time do you think that created? And what kind of, you know, stuff that was already coming across the water, maybe the lag time won't be so much, but the second round of stuff coming back across the water, you'd think there would be some lag time there. So I guess as you look at this, Blake, what kind of lag time do you think this is going to create, you know, for stuff coming and going, especially coming across the water?
Well, your inbound vessels, I mean, anything that was even within 2 to 3 days of arriving into Baltimore was diverted.
Right.
And now you're just looking at, okay, what port did it get diverted to? Because again, you have a finite number of ports that can actually handle these vessels. So all of these carriers would be forced into putting those laden vessels into other areas. So you're probably going to see inbound wise, an initial blip, if you will. Potential delays could be, you know, 2 to 3 weeks. And I'm just spitballing that because, again, you're going to have everybody fighting for those positions. You're going to then be putting a strain on the infrastructure of those ports because keep in mind, when they discharge, there's already a bunch of units awaiting to be loaded. Right. So now you're going to have all the units being discharged, you know, potentially within the course of 4 to 5 days. And it may take a lot more. And again, these ports are set up to run pretty smoothly based on normal operations.
Right.
Now you're looking at, you know, having to juggle in potentially additional rail car flat cars, additional, you know, flatbed truckers. You know, so everybody would be scrambling to, you know, accept the inbound first and foremost, and then, you know, the outbound that's there, odds are the carrier would probably load what is ever at the port and not really hold the ship up, as the units that are in Baltimore would still be matriculating into these other rural ports. So I think your lag, your delay on your inbound, like right now, could be 2 to 3 weeks. Once those ships are loaded back through their rotation, you know, you might see additional lags, you know, a month from now, depending upon, you know, where all the units in Baltimore have been dispersed to. Again, no, I don't think any of these carriers would be foolish enough to, you know, say, oh, we've had, you know, 400 units sitting in Baltimore. Let's move all 400 into Savannah. They would probably split it up.
Right.
But you're still going to have, you know, some capacity constraints.
Do you see an anticipation where after this first wave of stuff that was coming across the water, just like you talked about, that second wave coming would have a longer delay period than what you just talked about?
No, I would think that by then, contingency plans, additional capacity, be it, you know, rail, be it truckers, these companies probably would have figured it out. Because again, you're going to have, you know, at least a 3, maybe a 4 week gap until that vessel arrives again, you know, the next one in the spring. Mm-hmm. So I would be of the opinion that short term, like right now for the next 2 to 3 weeks, you're going to have issues based on the ships discharging. And again, depending upon what is on these vessels, you know, using Wilmington, that is primarily for cars and autos. I don't think it has the, I could be wrong, I don't think it has the capability to handle some of the larger ag machinery inbound, outbound. So your bottleneck is going to be at those ports that have the ability to handle the much larger units than just regular, you know, cars.
Gotcha. All right. Obviously the cargo freight that was coming in out of Baltimore, like you and I talked earlier when we were discussing this, that's not that big of a deal for the Baltimore port, correct?
I wouldn't say it's not that big of a deal. My comment, you know, from our conversation earlier was, you know, we're out here in the Midwest, and if you're an exporter or an importer out here in the Midwest, Baltimore isn't going to be your primary port for inbound or outbound, simply for the fact that it doesn't have the rail connectivity into Chicago, into Minneapolis, into Kansas City, into Omaha, that you're going to get with, you know, the Norfolk Southern, the BN, the CSX, the UP. So my comment about Baltimore not being that major of a port was predicated upon, if you're in the Midwest and you're an exporter, odds are you probably weren't going through Baltimore anyway. If you're in the Pennsylvania area, if you're in, Virginia, some places out there, yeah, Baltimore would be one of your primaries to go out of from a containerized standpoint. But you're basically trucking the cargo into the port. There isn't the rail leg to bring it in. So yeah, there will be an effect on, you know, people that are exporting out of the Baltimore area. There's a lot of bulk grains that gets handled through Baltimore, a lot of soybean business, again, based on proximity to where you are along the eastern seaboard.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes total sense.
Again, it's not really going to affect you out here in, you know, the upper Midwest or even, you know, into Ohio. Again, you're going to be going out of New York, Norfolk, Montreal.
Right. So when you're looking at from, so I guess let's take the Eastern Seaboard ports and just kind of my last question here. Obviously, there's just a handful of places that you can take roll on, roll off. We've established that. But as you're looking at the container freight that comes in and out of that would be coming in and out of Baltimore as a whole, roll on, roll off and container freight stuff, how do you think, I mean, are the ports going to have the, is this going to be a huge issue with the ports where this is now, this is going to create another bottleneck with the container freight that's coming in and out to where we see maybe some delays from that? Or is that pretty easily absorbed inside these different ports?
I would say it's going to be pretty easily absorbed. Again, short term, vessels that were about to berth, that were in route. Again, you're going to have a little anomaly, if you will, for the next 2 to 3 weeks as that tonnage is diverted into Norfolk, Charleston, Wilmington, North Carolina, you know, these other, you know, bigger ports on the Eastern Sea, New York. You know, it could even be, you know, Halifax, depending upon who the steamship line is. You know, you could be discharged in Canada and still work your way into the Midwest via the rail service. So again, I look at it, it's going to be a short-term bottleneck at some of these ports. You know, and unfortunately, you as the importer, you know, if there's an additional rail cost, that might be passed on to you because, you know, hey, we weren't expecting to have to rail it from, you know, Savannah now into wherever it's. And unfortunately, you know, a lot of the cargo containerized business that would have been discharged in Baltimore would really be near to that port. And when I say near, I mean within maybe, you know, 250, 300 miles, something that's going to be truckable. Well, now your containers are going to be diverted and discharged in Norfolk or New York. And the steamship line is going to say, well, here, it's now, we've done really our best thing that we can do. We've dropped it in New York, come and get it. So at the, you know, on the backside, unfortunately, you as the importer are going to have additional costs to, you know, retrieve your freight.
Right. Yeah. I think that's the, so you're already looking at a 3 to 4 week time, like kind of what you talked about, kind of spitball in your head, kind of your best guesstimate here, 3 to 4 weeks lag time there, and then getting it out of the port and reestablishing your inland trucking is going to be another delay. So you could easily see 30 days worth of delays coming up here. With that anticipation, do you kind of foresee that always being 30 days till the port in Baltimore gets open, or do you feel like that'll keep compressing down as they get more streamlined with their systems?
Well, from the containerized side of things, if you know, immediately when the port shut down, the steamship lines, every one of them sent out, we will reject anything that is, you know, was supposed to be loaded via the Port of Baltimore. So that there is really no delay, if you will. You simply would be like, okay, I can't get it out of Baltimore. I better find a different steamship line to get my goods moving. Your delays again are really in the greater scheme of things, short term, while the capacity that was coming in gets diverted and gets handled. Again, these row carriers, they only ship, you know, once a month on some of their trade lanes. You're lucky at times if you might get two ships a month. So again, the delays that you could possibly foresee as a small independent, you know, exporter of secondhand equipment, you could potentially, it's not necessarily delay. It's just that you'd be ineffectively shut out. The capacity wouldn't be there to take on, you know, your 1 to 2 units. And, you know, that could be, you know, 3 to 4 months based on what the big three are trying to do based on Baltimore not being an option to have any capacity go out.
Yeah. So in some instances, some of these smaller manufacturers of equipment could just effectively just have a hard time just even getting space, period. On a
correct
across and mm-hmm. Mostly just yeah. Guys like me trying to export something to Romania or wherever. Good luck, basically.
Well, exactly. You know, not to be cavalier, but yeah, good luck trying to get on a row ship. And you know, the alternative then is, you know, it's not great from a cost standpoint, but it at least affords you the ability to plan on a weekly service by utilizing a flat rack with any of the box carriers.
I guess that brings up one more question, and then I'll stop asking you questions, Blake. But
sure.
One more question would be, so you look at some of the manufacturers like Deer Case, you know, all the guys that have domestic manufacturing, ATCO, those kind of things here in the United States that are shipping mm-hmm. stuff across the way too. I mean, again, there is the roll on, roll off going back. So again, that space is going to be gobbled up by those as well. When you start looking at some of these smaller pieces of equipment that you can put on a flat rack, like you're talking about, you know, tractors mm-hmm. and those kind of things, how fast do you think that's going to get sucked up to where, as, instead of being a roll on, roll off situation that they normally do, they might start looking at more of this flat rack stuff?
Oh, I wouldn't worry about the capacity of the carriers and their flat racks. That, I mean, at that point, you're looking basically at containerized movements. And the issue that you may run into is, and we've seen this happen at times, you know, we were doing a lot of business of, you know, larger combines, sprayers, et cetera, over to China for the past 2.5 years. And the issue that you'd run into at times is equipment availability, i.e. the flat rack at the port. But that might ebb for about a week before, oh, here's the next inbound ship, or, you know, we've repoed in some flat racks to take on the additional capacity. That would really be the only driving factor for a delay is, you know, yeah, we don't have any flat racks to give you for this vessel this week. However, it looks like, you know, we could load you, get you ready, staged, and you're going to hit the vessel going next week or the week after. So,
gotcha.
I'm not worried about the industry and the steamship line's ability not to take on the additional capacity that might need to be shifted over to flat racks.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, Blake, this is going to be one of those, you know, ever evolving situations that you're going to have to keep an eye on. If folks want to reach out to you and get more information about what you're doing over at Professional Export Services, or just may have some questions about this in general, what's the best way for them to do that?
Sure. Great. Thank you. Yeah. Feel free. Send me an email. My email address would be blake@proexport, no S, so proexport.net. So blake@proexport.net.
Right on. And I'll have that in the show notes as well. So if you guys want to reach out to Blake, make sure you do that. Blake's, like I said, I've done some stuff with Blake before, and he's been very on the spot with what's going on. So Blake, look forward to talking to you again, man. If something else pops up, we'll get you back on the show here and we'll discuss it further.
Appreciate it, Casey. Look forward to seeing you down in Nashville later on this year.
Yeah, me too. Me too. So look forward to that. So I'm Casey Seymour with Moving Iron Podcast. Check me out on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Moving Iron LLC. Go to LinkedIn at Moving Iron Podcast. Check the video version of this over on the podcast channel, which is the Moving Iron Podcast channel on YouTube. And you can check it out as well on the movingironllc.com website. So go to there and get all the information about the Moving Iron Summit coming up. Like Blake said, he'll be down there for the Moving Iron Summit in Nashville, November 4th through the 6th. And he'll have a little space where he's talking about what's going on in the world of exports. So with that, I'm Casey Seymour with Blake Bina. Let's move some iron, folks. Out.
The Moving Iron Podcast is brought to you by these great sponsors. Are you looking to value your equipment more accurately, target the right buyers and close more deals, reach your ideal customer? Then look no further. Fusible isn't just about ag data. It's about action. Our best-in-class solution empowers you to value your equipment accurately, make informed decisions, and find the perfect prospects. Ignite your dealership's growth at fusible.com moving iron-podcast. Out in the field, every decision counts. You wouldn't plant without testing your soil, so why would you prospect blind? Introducing EDA, your one-stop shop for ag equipment intel. EDA goes beyond specs and prices. You get deep dive data on every piece of equipment, like UCC filings that help track ownership changes and uncover potential sales leads, D&B firmographics, which help you understand the financial health and buying power of potential customers, market trends that help you stay ahead of the curve, and insights on equipment demands and pricings. With EDA, you're not just looking at data, you're seeing opportunity. You find the right buyer, sell smarter, and build lasting relationships. Visit edadata.com for your free demo and unlock the power of knowledge. For over 80 years, Iron Solutions has been your go-to data source for ag dealers, lenders, and manufacturers. Get powerful appraisal and value forecasting tools that fuel profitable decisions anytime, anywhere. Get your free demo at ironsolutions.com. Iron Solutions, confidence in every click. Today, there are many ways to finance ag equipment, but nobody delivers simple, fast, or flexible financing like AgDirect. Learn more about your options to buy, lease, and refinance equipment at agdirect.com. Valley Transportation has been hauling ag and construction equipment across the country for the past 33 years. Call Parker at 800-657-4910 for all your trucking needs. At Valley Transportation, our goal is to help you reach yours. This podcast is proudly provided by Axon, helping dealers move more iron for the past 100 years. Find out more at axontire.com. Move more iron with Axon.
Moving iron in the 21st century.